Hello, listeners, and welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse for anywhere between 5 and 4,000 damage at a time. I mean, probably. If wind conditions are right. And dependent on hit location, penetration value, and dozens of other related factors that all contribute small variances to the chance that we have at hitting a dead horse, as we review Living Steel, a game written by actual rocket scientists. Or robots that can learn anything except how to love. I forget. System Mastery.
You forget System Mastery?
Yeah. I'm afraid I've forgotten System Mastery. Also, I forgot about Dre.
You son of a bitch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to System Mastery. I'm your host, Jeff, joined, as always, by your host, John. John, how are you?
I am Groot.
Well, okay, but could you be feeling better?
I don't know. I could be Grooter.
You could be more Groot.
I could be a little Grooter. I could be Magrooter.
I am Magroot. Oh, man. Groot's Scottish cousin, Magroot.
Magroot.
I am Magroot. That's all he says.
Yeah.
I don't know why he says it in that accent, that not at all Scottish accent that I used.
Yeah, because you're bad at everything.
I'm bad at everything. That's true. I am bad at everything.
It's true. Very true. But, so, yeah.
But if I was good at Grooting, you'd know.
you'd be all up in that Groots.
No treble. So let's see, John. We covered, or we will be about to cover, a fine book by the name of Living Steel.
Yeah, and for anyone who isn't aware of what Living Steel is, you might be aware of its slightly more notorious cousin, Phoenix Command.
Also, you might be a redneck.
Yeah, if you know what Living Steel is, you might be a redneck.
Well, honestly, in any situation, you might be a redneck. Rednecks can have a diverse set of interests.
I mean, it's possible. You might be a redneck no matter what's going on.
Absolutely. As long as you're alive and, I guess, some kind of human, you might be a redneck.
It is possible. There is a non-zero chance that you are a redneck.
I'm not going to jump to any conclusions if I can avoid it.
Yeah. If you are currently alive and on the planet Earth, you might be a redneck.
If you are listening to my comedy albums, there's a pretty solid chance you might be a redneck.
If you're me, you might be a redneck.
If your car stereo got stuck on Raw Dog Comedy, so you have to listen to this no matter what, you might be a redneck. Also, that fat guy who says Fluffy coming up next.
Welcome to the world's worst comedy. And by that, I mean System Mastery.
Something in Glacius, that guy. I'm so fluffy guy.
I don't know.
Oh, he might be the worst.
He might be, but he isn't.
There's a pretty strong race for lowest comedian.
Yeah, there's a good race to the bottom here.
Yeah, I don't know if he's generally inoffensive, and he doesn't show up in a lot of other media formats.
Nah. If you don't want to deal with him, you pretty much can get away.
It's not like Larry the Cable Guy, where you can't go to the store without seeing him on a box of muffins.
Larry the Cable Guy's box of muffins.
I am not even... I mean, mostly they're at 99-cent stores nowadays, but for a long time, it was just his big, dumb face plastered put beer in this, and then make beer muffins. Yeah.
Get her done.
Also, Prilosec.
Also, Prilosec. Put it in your muffins. Give me a Prilosec muffin.
Put Prilosec in your muffins so you won't die of morbidity.
Put Prilosec in your muffins and smoke it.
My sister has so many moles that she had to put Prilosec in her muffins.
You know,
anything to avoid the book, John.
Prilosec reminds me of Living Steel.
That's funny because it reminds me of, God, anything to not talk about. Yeah. The Rob Zombie song, Living Dead Girl.
Yeah. You know what reminds me of Living Steel? Living Dead Girls.
Anything. So, yeah, this is basically a sci-fi variation on the theme of Phoenix Command.
And, of course, for those of you who have neither heard of Living Steel nor Phoenix Command, it is a notoriously complicated book. As was mentioned in the intro, this is done by actual for reals rocket scientists.
So they were a company called Leading Edge Games that has since gone out of business. That their specialization, their thing that they were known for, was games that were more realistic than the common game because they took more factors into account, and you had to more. There were way more dice and tables between your role and your result.
Yeah, there was not a lot of abstraction here. You didn't just get to roll some dice and maybe do some damage to someone's meat HP. Oh, goodness, no.
No, not even slightly, because that wouldn't be realistic. And these games strove for absolute and perfectionistic realism.
That, of course, means that they rolled 3d6 for stats.
I love that so much. This game has like 10 stats that you roll 3d6 for, so when you would like to shoot someone with a gun, it's fine. You have to roll like five different charts for things like wind speed and ballistic curving factors, but still, your dexterity is anywhere between 3 and 18.
Yep. It's real great that that's a thing that happens in this.
It's just such a fundamental disconnect. It's like they literally had no mental concept for statistics that would be as realistically measured or monitored as like the rest of their game. They're like, okay, well, we can track bullet arcs with die rolls and random factors, but how do we track the limitations of the human body? Well, that's not a question. You roll 3d6, duh.
That was obviously solved long ago. See my citation here, Gygax.
Look, okay. On Hammurabi's code, it's like the second paragraph that says if you would like to randomize human physical characteristics, roll the 3 6-sided dice.
Yes, indeed.
Roll the not 4 dice and drop lowest, or you will lose your hand.
Although this book does use that. It uses both, which is great.
It uses roll 3d6 twice and take the higher of the two results for each one of your first 6 stats. And then for your back 4 stats, it's just roll 3d6. Don't drop anything. Don't roll twice.
Yep.
Which is weird. So you get 6 stats that you're likely to be good at and 4 stats that are entirely random.
Yeah. So the main stats, you're supposed to be good at most of your physical stuff. So strength, intelligence, health, agility, and will. These are all things that because...
Wait, will my first mate?
No, Will Smith.
Oh, okay.
You're supposed to be good at Will Smith. This game is half getting jiggy with it.
Damn it.
Well, I mean, it takes place in a far, far flung millennium.
Oh, man. So it doesn't take place in East Philadelphia, where I was born and raised?
Oh, no. This book welcomes you to Miami. Bienvenidos a Miami.
Oh,
Will Smith.
Shoot. Does there at least... tell me, please, at least, that there is an expansion for if I want to set the game Once Upon a Time in the West.
No. However, if you want it to be a man in black, you can do that.
Will Smith jokes.
Will Smith jokes, ladies and gentlemen. Cutting... edge Will Smith jokes.
Leading Edge Games Will Smith jokes.
So yeah, all of those, because you're supposed to be a protagonist and you're generally supposed to be at least competent in battle, no matter what's going on.
Yeah.
You should be the best of the best as far as that goes.
One of the neat things about this, before we dive in, I want to do one more little thing about Leading Edge Games. These guys were notorious for buying up licenses in the early 90s. So once we get through this rule set that we're going to try and, I guess, sort of skim the surfaces of here for you, because there's way too much for us to say in an hour.
Yeah.
I want you to picture that these guys bought the rights to the following couple of licenses to make role-playing games. The movie Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, not Dracula, just the movie Bram Stoker's Dracula.
The movie Aliens.
Yeah.
Not Alien, just the Aliens part of the franchise.
Yeah, you can't go and be on like some weird derelict mining vessel, but you can be a space marine.
Yeah, and then the Midnight Horror Cable Comedy Show featuring Elvira.
Man, that is excellent. That's exactly what I want.
I'm lying, of course, but...
God, I would love that. I'm just trying to imagine the jiggle physics that they tried to put into that game.
Oh, man. How come that doesn't exist? Couldn't we at least get that in the Cinematic Unisystem or Master System or something?
Yeah, come on, Master Book. Give me that.
Let's get that. The
Mistress
world of
the Dark.
Yeah, the world of Mistress of the Dark.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that'd be rad as hell. That could cross over directly with the Crypt Keeper stuff.
You're damn right it could.
Same system. Oh, man, straight up get Cassandra Peterson to endorse it.
Yeah.
She'll endorse whatever. She don't care.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, anyway, sorry about that. Let's get back into Living Steel's
rules.
Yep. So you've got those that you roll two different sets of 3d6 and pick the best.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that you're just rolling a straight 3d6, no modification.
Yeah.
Are your more social
yes.
aspects.
Right.
So charisma, leadership, motivation, size, teaching, and telepathic sensitivity.
Weirdly, teaching isn't teaching. So if you're thinking, oh, that's neat, it's got a stat for your capability to teach other people. It's not. It's your ability to learn.
Well, it's
does it do
kind
both?
Of both.
It does both.
Like, if you've got a high enough level in something, then you can train someone because, of course, the skill system for XP in this is if you do a certain roll, you roll under 10
mm-hmm.
for a success. This is a 3d6 roll under.
Yep.
That's
the core mechanic, but lest ye think that's all, don't.
Yeah, so if you roll under 10 and it's a success, then you can get a point towards leveling up. Now, a point isn't a point in the skill. A point is 1 point in your total that you need to level up a skill.
Yes.
And
keep in mind that those points feature decimals heavily.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get to roll for teaching a number of 3d6 equal to your intelligence modified by what the teaching value is.
Uh-huh.
So if you're a shitty teacher, you might be rolling like a number of times equal to your intelligence, like -5.
And no matter how many times you roll, you just can't reach these kids.
These kids. How do I reach these kids?
Wait a minute. The language of the street.
Hold on. You know, Shakespeare was a down-ass playa.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Shakespeare was a down-ass ninja.
Oh, I mean, he also was. If there's one person in all of history that was super dupes a ninja and was down with the clown.
How do I reach these juggalos?
Hey, you know who loved life and Faygo? Walt Whitman.
Oh, man. So what Robert Frost was trying to say is that you could choose to be a down-ass ninja who is down with the clown and a part of family, or you could choose the simple path, the path that most people choose in life. Now, where do you think you guys want to go?
Huh? Yeah. That path left traveled by, it's clowns. It's all clowns. I'm getting real sad about thinking about teaching juggalos.
Doctor, I'm super sad, and I don't know how to make myself feel better. Well, the great clowns Malenko are in town tonight. Go and see them. They will cheer you up.
Doctor, I am Malenko.
But doctor, I am Shaggy Too Dope. It's a funny joke.
It's a funny joke.
Raunch, raunch.
Everyone laugh.
Anything to avoid talking about Living Steel.
So you've got your stats, and most of them are just going to be giving weird small modifiers to your skills.
Mm-hmm.
The whole system in this, once you get past that super easy to grasp 3d6, it is just a fucking freight train into crazy town.
Yep. It's kind of funny because when the game gets started, like when you're first reading through, this book, by the way, gives you the barest outline of what the story is. The story is just straight up shenanigans nonsense until you read most of the way through the book when they finally kind of swing back around to it.
Oh, yeah. Like they start you with a small bit of background, like in-character information about what's going on.
Yeah.
And then it's going to take another like 4 chapters before they start talking about anything
so
again.
So as you're reading your way through the book, you mostly think this is like Space Marines from GW. Before Space Marines from GW were taken all seriously, like the late 80s version of them, where they were all like short, squat, ugly dudes who kept saying like "God save ye, fag emperor" on buildings and things. But then this book decided, no, fuck that. We're going to take them way too seriously.
The weird thing about this as well, when you're going through, is basically everything that you want to do to make your character, they're like, oh yeah, you'll need to do this and this. But it's all based on charts, and the charts are all in the back.
Yeah, this book does that thing where it's like, see chart 3.5, and you're on page 14, and chart 3.5 is on page 73.
Yeah, all of the charts are just in the back of the book, and it's all like, oh, if you want to determine the background skills for a character, go to chart 5G. In 5G, you will roll percentiles 5 times. This will tell you what your percentage skills are, or not even percentage skills, your decimal point skills in, like, groups A, B, C, and D.
This isn't a function that works for me. I don't have enough short-term memory for that structure. Like, I can't even do read-your-own-adventure books because I'll forget why I'm on page 26. Like, what the heck? Why did I follow a goblin into a cave? That's dumb.
Why would I do that?
What is this? Why don't I just read this thing from one direction to the other?
Yeah, why don't I just read this book to one direction?
Listen, Zane.
Sit down. Hearken ye to the folksy tale
of the great balloon race.
Listen to Space Vampires, a choose-your-own-adventure book.
All right, folks, help us out with that. On Twitter, everyone, our new goal in life is to get Nintendo, first of all, to retweet this really excellent toad. And then second, to get One Direction to sit down so we can read them a choose-your-own-adventure book.
Come on, One Direction. Get out of England and into my car.
Also, One Direction, if it's not too much trouble, could you retweet this very excellent toad?
So, as I was saying with the skills, the weird thing about it is it has skills in skill types. So it'll be like skill type A, skill type B, and it's groupings of skills, but it's not all like these are 5 skills and these are 5 skills. Skill type F is just driving.
Yes.
That's it. Instead of saying, like, you get a point to driving, they have to say you get a point in skill type F.
Well, what I was trying to say earlier, before I completely went off the rails entirely on my own, is that when you start out making your character, first the book gives you some crazy nonsense about the Star Guild societies and the 7 swords and what have you. But then it's like, here's Trent. Trent is a sample character. Here's how we built Trent. And that part of the book makes a little sense, because you're like, all right, you roll 3d6, and let's look at this picture of Trent's character sheet. Oh, look at that. There's where they rolled 3d6. Oh, look, that's where they wrote down yes for if he can use grav weapons. Okay, I kind of understand what's happening with this. And then the moment you run out of Trent character sheet, it's like they just pulled the rug out from under you completely.
Yeah. Once they really get heavily into the chart, you're like, I don't get what you're trying to say here, because I can't read straight through a character creation and constantly be flipping to the back and reading a giant chart and then flipping back again to where I was and going, all right, now, what was it I was looking at that chart for again?
Yes, that's what's going to happen. You have to basically keep your thumbs in this book at all times, and you're flipping 60 or 70 pages at a time just to try and understand it. To play it must be virtually impossible, but just to read it is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. I mean, given that the character creation process, when we get to the bonus content today, good Lord, it is going to be hours, because I tried when I was first reading this to make a character. And of course, rolling up stats, great, super easy. I started trying to roll up my background, and I got through like 3 charts worth of stuff. And by that point, I went, I kind of have no idea what the fuck I'm doing anymore.
Well, this book's definitely got more than one D1000 chart in it.
Yes,
yeah.
And like I had said before, it's got decimal points. So for a skill, you roll on a chart and it might say like, oh, you get 0.2 to skill group C. And I'm like, oh, god damn it. And then you also have a reason why you get that. So your background might be like, oh, you were a hero of the Battle of Reichel. Okay, so that means I get a 0.3 to group A and a 0.2 to group B.
And what those 0.2s and stuff are going to do is, in group B, there are like 5 skills, and you have a chance of having each one of them. And you, I think this is the way, if I'm wrong. Those are bonuses you add?
Those are bonuses you add. There are certain ones that are just a yes or no.
Yeah, there are 4 that are specifically yes or no. Power armor, las weapons, grav vehicles
and explosive weapons.
Thank you. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so when you're going through your background chart, depending on what battles you participated in or where you were stationed or things like that that you find out, you'll end up either getting a percent chance to know one of these skills, or it'll just say, yes, you know it.
Yeah. So certain chances you'll get super lucky on your background rolls, and they'll be like, you know power armor, which is basically completely important if you want to play this game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of your main characters are going to have power armor, which is super important, because if you aren't in power armor, you are just dead.
Yeah. Basically, if you use the random roll system and you don't generate a Seven Swords Knight that has access to power armor, kill that character and start again.
Yeah. I mean, may as well real quick go into that.
We'll talk about the backstory?
Yeah. So there's the Seven Swords, which are from the Seven Planets system.
Yeah, get ready for a lot of sibilance in this episode.
Yeah, so the Seven Planet system, before like faster than light travel got super efficient, this was a system that was super
successful and strengthy,
sexy.
Everyone thought it was super sexy and
had super science.
Yeah, ultimately they superseded the capacities of the major cities of the Star Guild sector.
Yeah, the Star Guild is pretty much what all of the bad sci-fi future is where Megacorps took over, and that's pretty much all it is. So the Star Guild was
just a supercilious collection of slime balls.
Was a group of corporations that got together, overthrew the government, and then created their own government.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the Imperium, which is basically the government for the Star Guild. The Star Guild is corporations that pretty much run the rest of the galaxy outside of these seven worlds.
Yeah, so there are basically two human civilizations out in space. One of them is the Seven World Societies, which are roughly seven planets that are populated by basically Ubermenschen.
Yeah, the Seven Planets whole deal was like, we value equality and freedom and justice and honor, and we're pretty much space knights. We're all space paladins.
Yeah, everyone's a space paladin. It's 300 in space.
And then your Star Guilds are, we are horrible corporate greedy men, and
we
have
the
a
lumpen
caste
mass
system, and the caste system is there's all the rich people at the top, and then we have middle management is the land caste.
Yeah, they're proletarianauts.
And then you have your workers, and the reason that they can hold control is they're the only people who can create and fix the faster than light travel.
Yes.
So even if a group of the low caste end up having a glorious revolution and throw off their chains and destroy the middle management or whatever and take over a planet, they have no way of then getting off and doing that anywhere else, and then they just get bombarded from space.
So anyway, as you can probably imagine, these two societies did not care for each other very much, and so they started having wars.
And in addition to that, you've got alien reptile Klingons called the Dragon Crest.
The Dragon Crest, and then a new type of alien that has to pop in just to get us even more S sounds, the Spectrals.
Well, the Spectrals don't pop in until way later.
No, they're pretty much the end of the story. But okay, so there's big wars happening between the Star Guild Society, the Seven Sword Society, and the Dragon Crest.
Yeah, the Dragon Crest were the first ones to develop power armor, which is what Living Steel is power armor.
Yes.
So the Dragon Crest show up, and they have power armor, and they're all about basically honor and combat, and they're just fucking lizard Klingons.
Yeah.
They fight the Seven Sword Society, who see power armor and go, dude, that's rad, create their own.
Yes.
And then the Seven Guild Society show up and are like,
Star Guild Society.
Star Guild Society.
Yeah.
Show up, say, fuck you, fight them, fight the Dragon Crest, get kind of punched a lot because they don't have power armor, create their own power armor, come back.
I love that basically we have this situation where it's everyone's got faster than light spacefaring civilizations, and the battles come down to who has armor.
Yeah.
Instead of, there's power armor guys all over that planet. Oh, that's okay. Let me just press this button that says make the planet a barren nothing. There
yeah.
we go. Done.
Well, the big thing they wanted the Seven Worlds for is it was seven inhabitable planets all in one little solar system.
Right.
So you didn't want to just glass a planet because the reason you wanted it is because it was inhabitable.
Fair enough.
And the other thing is the Dragon Crest and the Seven Swords Society, they did not believe in bombardment because they didn't attack civilian targets. They were all honorable.
None of them were gym teachers.
No. They were all very all about it.
So
Event Horizon.
A huge battle breaks out on the planet of Hrand. And this battle is between everybody.
This is 150 years after this.
Yeah.
So the thing that happens is Rand is not one of the seven worlds.
No, okay, fair enough. So let's finish off the Star Guild versus Seven Star Society, Seven Sword Society wars.
Yeah, the reason that you are generally going to play one of these Seven Sword guys with your own power armor,
mm-hmm.
and it's because this system fell to the Star Guild.
Uh-huh.
Star Guild ended up taking it over, like the last two planets to actually have any sort of resistance are Alpha and Hrykel.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened with you is you were in one of these battles, you got seriously injured and put into like cryostasis until they could find a way to repair you.
Yeah.
What happens, though, is it's about 150 years later, the Star Guild owns everything.
Mm-hmm.
The Dragon Crest have gotten their shit pushed in by Spectrals, and we go to the main planet of this is Rand, where Spectrals show up, and they fuck things up, but you get awakened to be like, yo, save this planet.
So basically, the planet Rand is all taken over by, like, Star Guild Society guys, and secretly, Spectrals arrive from space to poison the atmosphere with a serum that makes everyone go all psychotic. And then the Seven Sword Society is reawakened in secret Project Susu Studio.
Yeah, in this, I actually kind of like the story and setting of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be weird that I really do, but Rand is a...
It's just GW compressed into a single planet.
Well, no, because Rand was a tourist planet.
Oh, fair enough,
so
yeah.
The whole thing is like, there's all these cabanas and like little cabins and whatnot. So there are a bunch of people that managed to survive this virus, the Visser.
Yeah, so the Visser virus turns everyone into psychos. So it's basically the chaos virus.
Oh, yeah. Everyone who gets it, it affected like 80% of the population on the planet.
Yeah, and it turns them into something between Mad Max dudes and the, what do you call those guys in the Firefly.
Oh, the Reavers?
The Reavers, yeah.
Well, because we can't just leave it to this is what Vissers are, there's a 2-12, 2d6 ratio on how far gone you are in the disease.
Yeah.
But 2 is like, man, I can't really function very well in society, but I'm mostly okay. And 12 is straight up frothing lunatic.
Yeah. So like I said, it basically runs a gamut from like a Mad Max dude who's like, I can live in a weird town full of crazy people as long as I have like, I don't know, one gross shoulder or something. And then all the way over to 12, which is straight up just a Reaver who's like, I'll eat your face.
Yeah. And so you have a whole bunch of crazy, like, running around killing people, and they can only function in small groups because the second you find another group, you have to establish dominance.
Mm-hmm.
So they just murder each other a lot.
Yeah. So you are being, as the Seven Swords people, you are being awakened from cryosleep, where you've been in stasis for centuries, and I'm not going to give up on this noise thing. I guess a century and a half. Hey, this is your sesquicentennial. hell yeah. And you're being awakened by Alpha Star dudes who are like paramedics and police officers from the Star Guild who, even though most people in the Star Guild suck, these guys are at least, they're like one of the good ones.
Well, these are like, what were you? Oh, on this planet with all the tourists and whatnot, like, I was a doctor. I was someone that was in law enforcement. I was whatever.
I was a cop who got pushed too far, and now I'm on the edge, and I have nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, none
someone's loosened my cannon.
None of these people are going to be like, what are you? Oh, I'm one of the actual mucky mucks in the Star Guild. Those are probably either insane or off-planet.
Yeah, and none of these alpha dudes can stand up to the might of a single Seven Swords warrior.
No, they're all pretty much just regular people. Maybe they have like a suit of protective armor like Kevlar or something, mm-hmm. but you are in straight-up ridiculous power armor.
Ultimately, they're your pit crew.
Yeah, when you show up, the other big thing to know about Rand is it is the only planet that had a teleportation system.
Ah, yes, the Orca.
Yeah. And the Orca is a planetary teleportation system that got wrecked when the Spectrals attacked, but there's still like one satellite that works.
Mm-hmm.
Which
means that you can be teleported into mission zones.
Yeah, so you can only, you have a small window within it, so it's like the Orca works once every 2 weeks. So you can teleport into a place, you have a few hours of a window between, like, I can now teleport back out and go to wherever. But if you miss that window, then you're just stuck there for 14 days and have to wait until it comes online again.
So if this all sounds like, an extraordinarily convoluted way to say that you're playing as Terminators who can be teleported into combat zones, and also you have a bunch of servitors at home who can keep your armor in shape for you, then, that's weird, because I certainly didn't notice that immediately.
No, it's not like that at all.
It's nothing like that. It certainly isn't that the rest of the planet is a bunch of crazy dudes, some of whom are also wearing super powerful armor, so that you can have chaos like Space Marine type dudes. None of that. Neither are there very obvious Xeno analogs. Not even a little bit.
I don't know why you're harping on this 40K thing. This is nothing like 40K.
It is so much like 40K.
It is zero
right,
like 40K.
Right down to the fact that all of these Seven Stars Society dudes have like way too much pomp and circumstance baked into like their military history and their little crests and sayings, like, you know, like for justice and honor and also for the slaying of the Imperium. And just like, oh, I'm bearing the cross of the three chains connected to a circle. I have a sword that splits into four swords that's attached to me. It's like, this is everything about the Seven Sword Society is the same reason that I hated the Space Marines in 40K.
Ah, well, at least these guys are more like, instead of being space fascists, they're just space paladins.
Well, they're still kind of the Uber mention. Let's be fair. They are a class above the other humans that they ever meet. Like, literally, the game backs up the fact that they are better humans.
Well, that's because you were the best of the best, and it's why you were frozen.
Oh, so they weren't just better in general? Like, their whole society wasn't just straight up better?
No. The reason you were frozen is because you were a badass.
Ah, I see. Well, wouldn't that mean that you should have occasionally meet some badasses on the planet that are your equivalent, just because statistically there have to be some equivalent-level badasses?
Yeah, but they've probably gone insane, because 80% of the population has.
Still, statistically, 20% of the population didn't. There should be a couple of rad dudes you can meet.
Oh, yeah,
rad
you
enough
can.
Dudes to save the president.
Well, you can meet them, but they don't have a rad power armor like you do.
I'm just saying is all. All right, so basically,
I don't know why I'm going to bat for this game so hard.
I don't know either, because we're about to dive off the deep end of this fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Tom, what does it take to shoot someone in this game?
There are probably about five tables you need to start doing. Now, the first thing you need to do is figure out what your derived stat for shooting someone is, because it doesn't matter so much what your skill in guns or whatever is. You have a skill accuracy level.
Mm-hmm.
Your skill accuracy level is a a derived stat. You take, I can't remember which
sugar
three it is.
And spice.
Oh, and...
And everything nice.
And but, chemical X.
And then Professor Utonium accidentally added a secret ingredient. And I believe that secret ingredient was your agility stat.
Yeah, it was your agility.
Yeah.
So you take that, and then you have to take your skill in guns and subtract their skill in not getting hit by guns.
Yeah.
So you take the total of that and either add or subtract that to your skill.
I gotta say, I feel like I'm very, very good at that skill.
And
I've spent more than 30 years not being hit by guns. I have a 100% perfect record. My stat must be amazing.
So good.
Yeah, right?
You guys, so good.
I'm the best at not getting hit by guns.
Yeah.
No one's even thrown a gun at me, let alone bullets.
Let alone throwing bullets at me.
Yeah, my ability to not be hit by guns is impeccable. Also, I have a pretty good score to not be hit by bullets.
True.
Yeah.
So you have to take that, roll...
Flip it and reverse it.
Under your 3d6.
Mm-hmm.
Then the person who's getting shot has a chance to roll their defense, which is the exact same equation, just reversed on their end.
Uh-huh.
They roll for that. If they get hit, now you start getting to some charts.
Yeah.
Because the first thing you need to do is find out what kind of cover or level of protection they have.
Yeah.
Because that's going to decide which chart you roll on.
Mm-hmm.
When you find out what chart that is, so let's say they're in partial cover, so you go to chart C8, and then you go to that chart and you roll, and it says that you're going to have a shot that's going to hit them in a, like, shoulder. Okay, great. That was my hit location table. Mm-hmm. Now then, I got to go over to the shoulder location table. I get over there, and I got to look at the penetration value of my gun versus the armor value of their shoulder armor.
Yep.
Now, what I got to do then is roll again to see how this hits, whether it's a penetrating or a glancing shot.
Yeah.
And if it ends up being a penetrating shot or a glancing shot is the difference of possibly thousands of points of damage.
That is correct, yes. If it pierces your armor versus if it doesn't.
Like a glancing shot against, say, shoulder armor, I could end up taking like 5 damage, 5 HP, which this isn't hit points, it's like health percentiles or some shit.
Yeah, this game uses a wound system.
And then you check that versus your health stat.
Yes.
Now, the amount you can take goes up to like, oh, I got shot in the heart and I just took like 5,000 points of damage and you're to blame.
I was going to say, did you get shot to the heart because I rolled 8?
Oh,
that was bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was real bad. Mine was better. Get out.
Whatever. I'm the editor. I'm going to use mine.
So the only thing is when you get hit, you have to take 1/4 of your health value or less, and you don't roll to see if you get shock. Because shock is the like, oh my god, I took damage and I like pass out or I can't function, I'm too much in pain or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
So if it's under a quarter, which most of the time is going to be about 4,
right?
Then great, nothing happens. Once you hit 5 up to half of your value, then you get a 10% chance that you get in shock.
Yes.
So that means the bullet that hits my shoulder and glances off of my armor and does 5 points of damage,
yeah,
has a 10% chance to knock me out.
Now, once you're knocked unconscious, you're going to be unconscious for quite a while.
Yeah, you're going to be out for the fight. When mm-hmm. you get any shock, you're basically considered to just be out until the scene is over, pretty much.
That is correct. At which point, you are called upon to make a roll to wake up.
Yeah, you've got charts for coming out of, like, whether you're out of damage. The big thing is also, you have a chart that you cross-reference your health versus the damage you took,
mm-hmm.
and that gives you your heal chart. And the heal chart will tell you, like, if I took 5 damage and my health was, I don't know, 14.
Uh-huh.
Then I would have to make a roll after 72 hours to see if I'm fine. Now, that roll, of course, is a 0 through 90 means I'm fine. However, if I roll a 92, I've died. Someone poked me in the shoulder, I passed out, and then died.
5
days later. I'm a superhero.
But John, it's so realistic. Often people can die in unexpected events from wounds.
Yeah, and it happens like 5% of the time to everyone who takes any wound. Why, I remember back in high school when people would hit each other with pencils. Why, kids were dropping left and right.
One time I threw a pencil at my friend, I think his name was Tavis, when I was in middle school, and I just threw a pencil at him from across the table, and it stabbed him in the forehead, and the pencil was hanging from his forehead.
Did he die?
About 72 hours later, he died.
Yeah, so as you can see, this game is very hyper-realistic.
Well, I mean, he was hit by a car. I
did throw the car at him, though.
There's a reason I don't usually tell this story, because it's just sad. Really.
I was drunk driving, and I hit him.
I did it. I killed him.
It was me. Police, please come get me.
This is a cry for help. I sure hope he's not actually dead.
Oh, Tavis, I hope you're fine.
I hope you're okay, dude, even though you were kind of a pretentious dildo.
So, yeah, the percentage chance to pass out, of course, gets much higher the more damage you've taken in relation to your health. But it stacks, so that 5 damage, if I then took another 5, I would have taken 10 and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really matter until you get to the point where it's like, I've taken 4,000 damage.
Yeah.
Because at that point, there are levels of treatment you can get. Because like the guy who just took a little wound in his shoulder doesn't need any treatment, and if no one sees
him... Well, clearly, he does need some treatment.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah.
I mean, his mortality rate is like 10%.
Oh, yeah. The mortality rate of having a bruised arm is just brutal.
Yeah, like if chicken pox had a 10% like fatality rate, you'd bet people would be hospitalizing their kids for it. So yeah.
So the way it works, if you take a shitload of damage, is stuff like, oh, if someone has like first aid. They can come over and try and stabilize you, but all that does is expand the time until you need another roll. So like it might be, I got shot in like the fucking stomach. I have 6 rounds to live because I've taken a shitload of damage. So someone needs to come over and help me out. And if someone stabilizes me within those 6 rounds, then now I've got a 2-hour window until I need to make my roll to see if I die. And if you can get me to a hospital in that time, then I can make like a 1-day roll. And then in that day.
But the odds don't change.
Well, no, the odds completely change because if no one helps you first aid wise, then you just die. Mm. Even first aid is in 2 hours, you die.
Right. But does the hospital give you a greater than 10% chance of, or less than 10% chance of just dying?
If you took like 4,000 damage, you've got basically like a 48% chance of living.
Okay, well, let me run through what my scenario of questions here. I shoot you in the shoulder. Yes. I don't even penetrate your armor, but it freaks you out so bad you fall unconscious.
Yes.
Normally, you'd die at the end of the round, of the fight, unless someone stabilized you.
No, that would only be if I took massive damage.
Oh, it's only massive damage where this comes into play. All right, very good. Thank you for the answer. So, John, let me ask you, what does day-to-day gameplay look like in this nonsense?
So the average way in which you're supposed to be playing this game is you are like 4 or however many people are in your party, awakened swords.
Okay.
You're here to try and save this planet, which has just gone to shit.
Okay.
Not only do you have the Vissers to deal with, you also have some spectral forces on the planet.
Right. And spectrals are matte black alien apey looking things that absorb all light.
The spectrals come in several varieties, so you can find one that's like I'm a minor worker up to I'm one of the leaders.
Yes.
None of the leaders are here. They do have pathfinders, mm-hmm. which are like interim leaders because all their leaders died above planet during this attack.
Uh-huh.
But they're super intelligent and badass, and they have a couple slave races. They have like the Slovek, who are your standard, we can't even farm or feed ourselves, but we're super hyper able to beat the shit out of people, so we're a war race, and I don't understand how we managed to evolve.
So basically, people from Kansas. I'm kidding. Yeah. People from Kansas are great at farming. I apologize to the
people. Come on, how dare you say people in Kansas can't farm?
But apologize to the fine people of Kansas.
This is more like people from Florida.
People from Florida. They can get in ridiculous fights, but they can't take care of themselves in any way.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. So the Slovak are literally just Floridians.
Yeah, they're big, plated, like, shock troop guys.
With huge meth problems.
Oh, yeah, just the worst. and then they've got some tiny race like the Trank or something that are just... They have no innovation in their culture, but they're great at fixing things.
That sounds like the Time Breakers from the old Marvel Exiles series.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, we can't figure out how to do anything, but we're super smart when it comes to using other people's shit.
They're really good at process.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, if I gave you a set of tasks and instructions, would you be able to do them? Oh, hell yeah. That's exactly what I'm the best at. Can you come up with anything on your own? Oh, gosh, no.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it.
All right.
So you've got some aliens to deal with. You've got a bunch of infected crazy people. And so your missions are going to be things like either like set up a place for people to that are like refugees running away from all of this craziness to stay, or go into a combat zone and try and rescue someone, mm-hmm. or like do an attack sortie against whoever. There are little sites on there. Like most of the huge... industrial places got bombed, but there are a few like clinics and things like that. One of the major factions on the planet is a subsidiary of some company that's all about
that base, like, yeah,
pharmacy tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all the medicine, so they're a superpower now. So you might try to be like, oh, let's see if we can deal with them or make deals with whoever owns the power generators, you know, stuff like that.
So how much of this stuff do you think you'd be able to do in a single session of play?
Well, you'd pretty much just pick one. You'd have a setting that lends itself really well to episodic play.
I really feel like you're coming around to this book.
Oh, I've 100% come around to the idea of this book.
Yeah.
Because
what I'm trying to drag you is, looks like combat in this game would take an hour to resolve, like, a gunshot.
Oh, yeah. It's the reason why it has to be so hyper lethal is because if you had to be like, oh, yeah, and I shoot at you and it does 5 HP and you've got 60 HP and now you shoot at me and we're going to sit here and do this for a while. Resolving a shot takes so many rolls before you know what happened that by the time you're done, you're like, man, this is going to take an hour to do a full combat.
I'm glad we killed that guy.
So, yeah, it's a little complicated. It's a little too complicated.
It's a lot too complicated. And the thing I love about this is I read this one first and then passed it off to you for the past week. And over the previous week, I got a little curious and I just wanted to see what like people's reactions to this book were.
Yeah.
So I went and Googled around to look for this thing on forums. And do you know what the number one complaint about this book is?
I do not.
It is not complex enough.
Oh, that's good. That makes me real happy.
Basically, looking into books written by Leading Edge Games is looking for a class of gamer that you don't encounter very often. The kind who are like, this is never complex enough. Where it's like, well, this game does an okay job of measuring the minute differences between two types of handguns. But I could imagine an even more complex system. That's why we added a bunch of house rules for wind speed.
Oh, yeah. They don't even have fractions for their combat load in weight. What is this?
Is this for my little brother? I don't understand what I'm supposed to be reading here. So I it was just an interesting look into a new world for me where you and I both, I mean, admittedly, for a review show, we do tend to have some strong biases, but both of us trend towards games should be simple and fast.
Yeah. I mean, at least in combat, have rules where even if the rules behind the scenes are complex, it can boil down to one or two rolls.
Right. But this was just an interesting look at people who want their games to straight up just be physics simulators. So one thing that we haven't even talked about in this game yet, and I will not let us get to the end of this podcast without, is the time scale in it. Like the initiative count style timescale.
Oh my god, yes.
So let's talk about what a round is in this game. Because a round in this game is 4 seconds long. And that, I'm sorry, 2 seconds long. I'm so sorry.
How dare you?
I didn't have the book I only had it for the first week. Each round is 2 seconds long, and that round is divided into 4 half-second phases called impulses. And characters are expected generally to have an action on each one of those 4 impulses, which could be things like moving, aiming, shooting, and so on. Most people in power armor will have multiple actions per impulse.
Yeah. You actually have a stat for how many actions you get per round.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I had 6 actions, I'd get 2, and then 2, and then 1, and then 1.
Uh-huh.
But most people in power armor just gives you extra actions because it makes you faster.
It's usually like +5 actions.
So you end up having like at least 8 actions, meaning, all right, I'm doing 2 things per half of a second.
Yeah.
So in a quarter of a second, I'm like, yeah, I'm running super fast, or I'm shooting a gun, like pulling that trigger way fast.
This is what I mean about this game seeming to be about like measuring the powers of super ubermensch from space, is these guys are like constantly going, I will shoot 8 times in the next half second.
Except you won't, because the way that shooting works is,
you got to do a lot of aiming or you'll just miss.
Yeah, every gun has an aim stat that it goes through, and it allows you a certain number of rounds that you can aim, and if you don't aim at all doing a quick shot, you are at like -23 or some shit to hit.
Yes.
Of course, the 23 isn't the negative to your roll, your 3d6. It's instead going onto its own chart of chance to hit.
Yeah, it goes onto a different chart. But just so you know, I mean, but the thing is, this game happens incredibly fast. Like, the things that are occurring in this game world, like watching combat between 2 power armor guys, has got to just be ridiculous.
And it's so weird because, like we said, any amount of prolonged combat is going to take you just rolling out and doing so long. But then you're like, oh, how much in-game time passed? Oh, about 10 seconds.
Yeah,
okay.
And that would be a huge fight. That's 5 rounds of fighting.
Oh, yeah. And at that point, you're like, oh, good. That took us 2 hours to do that 10 seconds of fighting.
Yeah. And just try to put yourself in a position where you're like, all right, for the next 2 seconds, I'm going to try and accomplish 8 different things.
Yep.
And then see how well you do with that over the course of 2 seconds. See how many times you can pull triggers, move around, and you know, try and talk to other people at the same time.
The game also has rules for facing. So while
it's hex gridded too.
Yeah, you've got a hex grid that you run around on, and you can change one hex facing per hex you move for free.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to do more than that, it takes you an action to turn.
Yeah, and they call them, what do they call them, hex faces or something like that,
yeah,
for each time you turn around. One of the things I found amusing while reading through this is the amount of things that they trademarked. Like, for example, the word spectral for their alien race is a trademark of what do you call it, Leading Edge Games.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
Yeah, it is. The first time.
Oh, no, I'm saying no.
Oh.
No, you can't trademark spectral. If someone's like, I have something that is spectral, you can't be like, no, our thing is. No, that's a word.
So just so you know, almost every time a proper noun shows up in this book, it's trademarked. I guess because they were planning for a huge franchise of the Living Steel universe.
Well, they already mention other books in this. There's one that's like an entire source book that's about the radio station run by Vissers.
Great. I mean, that very well might exist. This game might not have been especially popular, but Leading Edge Games was. There's a reason so many people kind of hold Phoenix Command as the high watermark of, oh my god, this game is overdesigned, because it was a big deal for a long time. A lot of people out there play and own Phoenix Command.
Yeah, this is definitely, if you're one of those players who's like, man, what I cannot get enough of is crunch, then this is a game that you're like, yes, give that to me. Let me consume it like granola on the trail.
Oh my god, is that mana from heaven? I love charts.
Give me that crunch. Let me crunch into it.
I love books that are laid out the same way physics textbooks are laid out.
Oh my
god. All the charts are at the back.
Are you Cap'n Crunch? Crunchitize me, Cap'n.
Oh man, I will follow my nose, because it always knows the way to overcomplicated games.
Yeah, so
Living Steel.
Living Steel. There you go.
I tried to do a cookie crisp, but it didn't work.
No.
I'm sorry.
You can't cookie this crisp, baby. It's too crunchy.
I just wanted to keep doing cereal mascot at things. And what else am I going to say?
I'm cuckoo for cocoa graphs?
I'm cuckoo for cocoa graphs.
Yeah, I've got a graph on how cocoa something is.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'll give that one to you. All right, so let's move forward here. What would you say, John? What would you do if I sang out of tune?
I don't know. I mean, how do I talk to an angel?
Oh, man. All right. So, John, what would you say is your favorite thing about Living Steel?
I actually really like the background information of this. I specifically am going to say I enjoy the way the world is set up to do that episodic nature. So the fact that you've got this teleportation system, which is you can go from whatever your home base is, you can teleport out to whatever the adventure is, go do that, and then teleport back to wherever you are.
I like that just because it takes out what otherwise would have been an unwieldy, boring part of this game, which was large distance hex-based travel rules.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially because you just wake up and have power armor. Like, you don't have a tank or a truck even.
Yeah.
So a lot of the things, though, you're talking about a planet. It's like, oh yeah, we're over here, but on another hemisphere is where something is going down.
Yeah, so that's useful, because ultimately if this game had overland travel rules, you can rest assured they would have been way too complicated for bother. We wouldn't have talked about them.
Oh no,
they would not have shown up during this discussion.
Yeah, while grav vehicles is a thing you can have, there was not a giant thing talking about traveling through them, because they assume you're just using the Orca.
And to be fair, the odds of having grav vehicles for your character are surprisingly low.
Oh yeah, you're almost guaranteed to have power armor, but that's like that and las weapons are basically what you're gonna have. Having explosives or grav tanks or whatever, that's a little less likely.
Yeah. Gee, Space Marines that operate some sort of hovering tank. What are the odds indeed, John?
Oh, not very good, considering that Space Marines don't normally have hover technology.
Oh, I'm sorry, they didn't used to, but they do now. Now the Primaris guys have their own friggin' hover tanks, because we can't leave any room for Eldar to have a thing, John. That's
you're just bitter about Eldar, that's all you are.
I'm bitter about Eldar, I'm bitter about Tau, I'm bitter about Dark Eldar.
You're just bitter about Xenos. You're not a true-blooded American.
Neither are any of the Space Marines.
Well, yeah, some of them are.
No, they're GW.
From Holy Terra.
They're all super British.
Yeah, well, some are from Terra. You got to imagine a few are American.
No, America was long ago taken back over by the Brits in the GW universe.
Obviously.
It was reabsorbed into the Holy British Empire.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you like the backstory.
Well, I really like the Orca system. The I can teleport to a thing, because it lets you just go, hey guys, this is your mission. Go save this person from this roving band of Vissers. Okay, great. You never have that option where it's like, okay, here's an open world, and what direction do you guys want to go in? And you have an adventure for the north, and they're like, we want to go south. And you try and change what it is, and by the time they get to it, they're like, ah, this sucks, we're going west.
That has never affected me when I've run games. Whenever I'm like, all right, guys, there's a massive, awesome dungeon to the north, and to the northeast, or to the west and east and south, you don't know what's there.
Oh, man, there are so many fucking stories from people that I have known or played with.
I know.
The GM said, there's a bunch of undead here. You guys are mostly here to clear out the undead. You hear whispers of them in the forest. And they're like, oh, okay, we're going to stay in town and try and fix their plumbing. And you're like, what the fuck are you doing?
I'm going to run for mayor.
Yeah, the amount of times players are just like, nah, fuck it. Fuck this plot.
I've had that happen before, where I tried to run a Forgotten Realms games once from some of my friends, including that guy I threw a pencil at. And I was like, all right, guys, you guys are all going to start off in Shadowdale or whatever, and we're going to go on a cool adventure. And one of them was just like, I start walking towards Elminster's Tower. I know where it is from here because I own the Forgotten Realms maps. And I was like, oh, I don't care. The dungeon I was going to have you guys run through is just that way now.
Yeah.
Because that's how you always do it. You just go, guys, there's a cool dungeon right over here, and it's full of kobolds, and you should go to it. No. Okay, fine. Well, wherever you walk to, what do you know? There's that cool dungeon full of kobolds.
See, now, if you actually had the plot being that the dungeon was physically teleporting after them, that would be really neat.
That'd just be what 13th Age is. As it stands, I was just pointing out to them that free will and pre-will and determinism don't exist.
Pre-will.
Pre-will. You heard me.
You know, before Will Smith.
Before Will Smith.
That's what I have. My new calendar is pre-will and post-will.
It's not a very useful calendar because they both abbreviate to PW.
Yeah, but you got to figure it out.
In the year 7PW. Wait, do you mean like Hold in on. The early 80s or in like 1990? Which one?
Which one are we talking about here?
What are we doing? I got to use context clues. All right, well, there's a lot of neon everywhere.
No, you're going to have to step it up.
I'm sorry. Everyone wore very loose outfits for some reason. Cheers was on the air.
Oh, there we go. Finally.
Still doesn't work.
Some context clues. So there you go. There's my favorite. Jeff, your favorite thing in this book.
It kills me that you just took everything that isn't the rules.
I said specifically the Orca system.
Oh, fair enough. There are certain aspects of the backgrounds I thought were interesting. I like the descriptions of the alien races. I thought they were kind of cool. The Dragon Crest, I can take or leave, because that is straight up the name of a Nintendo role-playing game and not a... Dragon Crest is... You don't meet a bunch of guys who are like, hello, we are the Dragon Crest. That doesn't add up. That you'd be like, no, man, you're a one-player role-playing game from 1986.
Yeah.
That's what you are.
Yeah, definitely Dragon Crest.
That's a game where you fight slimes.
That's got a hallway system where you have to push left, and then it shows up and a skeleton is there.
Erdrick has hit the slime. What that is.
That is what Dragon Crest is.
But all the races that the Spectrals have enslaved, that was sort of neat. It was basically like a pre-covenant covenant.
Yeah.
So I was kind of a fan of that. I'm always going to be a fan of alien races in a game that has them. So there you have it. So I like the Xenos. What do you know?
Who knew?
I wouldn't purge them out of bed. All right. So what would you say is your least favorite thing in this game?
Whoo, baby. I'm going to go ahead and say my least favorite thing in this game.
I call the rules. Done.
Yeah. No.
All the rules.
I'm going to say specifically character creation.
Mm-hmm.
It has this seed that is almost good, which is why it ends up being the worst for me, because you've got your very easy to understand stats, and that's fine, whatever. It's an old game. Everyone was doing it. I understand it's a product of its time.
Yes.
But the entire background, like millions of charts and decimal points and whatnot, is so annoying because you originally were going through and it was like, oh, you have to roll and see, like, I was at the Battle of whatever, or I participated in this thing, and this is the year I was frozen, and this is why I've got whatever. Like, you can have like a
just
weird...
did this, too, because that's pretty much what Pendragon was as well.
Yeah,
except you're rolling for what your dad did.
Yeah, you can have a cool background thing that you roll up. It's just, unfortunately, what that means is, oh, good, now you've got 0.2 to skill group B, and I'm like, I don't care.
That was kind of a disappointment. It was like, your character is a hero of the Battle of Rigel Six. Everyone who was involved in it was like a master swordsman who held back a mighty tide of aliens. You get plus 2.2% to your seduction capability.
Good, thanks.
What? Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, and I mean...
It doesn't feel viscerally connected.
No. The skill system itself is so divided up into these skill groups, which are your basic bread and butter, like combat, driving, doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything else is a professional skill.
Yeah.
So it's like, what if I wanted to have a guy who was really good at woodworking? That's some professional skill. Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You can get some percentages in them, but whatever.
Yeah. So there you go. You didn't like the...
The character creation was annoying because it could have been really good and it ended up just going up its own ass with charts.
Sure. And I'm going to take something that might be divisive because I bet the people who love this game love it specifically because of it, and that's the combat system.
Yep.
The combat system in this game is way over-clunked. Like, basically, these are the people who wrote this, like
get
I was saying in the intro,
on.
Were like robots who could figure out everything about what it is to be human, except can't quite put the rest of it together. There were people who looked at like the D&D system where a round was like a minute long, right? And they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You swing your sword way more than once a minute. And the idea is, well, yeah, but you don't model all those times where nothing interesting happens.
Yeah, the amount of times where it's like clang, 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 clang.
Ha-ha! Clang,
parry,
jumping,
thrust,
turn, strike. You don't bother with that stuff. And the idea is that once a minute or so, something relevant will happen in a D&D combat, and that's the role that you do.
Yeah.
Or that it's the aggregate of small things that happened over the course of about a minute. But these guys looked at a system like that and were like, that's stupid. You have to model every single possible nanosecond of everything that's happening.
Yep.
So the end result is this game that just everything happens over minuscule, tiny amounts of time. You have to roll a million times to model what anything's happening. Ultimately, there's a point at which randomness isn't all that interesting anymore.
No.
And this game kind of hits that line and clears it like a high jumper.
Yeah, I mean, there is a point where it's one thing to randomly roll to see what happens. It is another to randomly roll on five charts and cross-reference one chart to a different chart every time you want to do anything. You're like, this has gotten to a level of randomness where I'm not even, like, I don't even feel like I'm playing this game anymore.
No, basically it's like you put input in on one end. It's not a game so much as it's one of those things that smashes pennies for you. Like, you put a penny in and then you turn the crank and what's going to come out? Maybe a little picture of Abraham Lincoln? You don't know.
Hey, what? It's a train museum that I'm at.
Yeah, but your input is limited. You just turn the crank. And that's what this game is, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those systems where you look at it and go, you know, if your math was super good, then sure. If this was a video game and you wanted this to be the background math for what happens, great. Do that. That's fine. But me as a player, I don't need to get that far under the hood.
I'm realizing Penny Crank isn't actually what I want to go with here. It's Plinko. This game is Plinko because you throw the ball on the thing and then you're done. You have nothing else to do with it except to watch as it goes bouncing off about a million different rules on its way down to the result part of the thingy.
Yeah.
You're just like, all right, let's throw this ball in there and a-dink, dink, 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 dink. Huh, I did not expect it to fire 45 degrees off to the right there. A-dink, dink, 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 dink. Huh, it's all the way back in the middle again. Dink, 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 dink. Huh, I feel like I had nothing to do with this.
Nope.
Oh, look at that. It went in a little black hole and I get nothing.
Wee.
Yay, Plinko.
Plinko.
So that's how I feel.
Yep, that's good.
That's my least favorite thing. John, what would you say if I asked you to marry me right here, right now on air?
My God, it finally happened.
I'm getting down on one knee. Listeners,
it's finally happened. And all of my and your dreams are coming true right now.
Reaching into my pocket to pull out the ring. Oh my God, it's one of those spinny D20 rings.
Oh no, you know me so well.
Would you play this game?
Not with this rule set. Never in a million years. Like, even though I like the background and the planet and what's going on here, I would never touch these rules. I wouldn't even get through character creation on these rules before I went, fuck you, buddy. I don't want to play your dumb game.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much indeed.
You, I assume, would not?
No, God, no. I didn't even really like the story all that much. It felt very derivative of a variety of things. I know I kept harping on 40K, But you know what this actually is, like straight up and down, is the original Heinlein novel Starship Troopers.
Yeah, that's much closer to this.
That's what this is. It's dudes in superpower armor firing tactical nukes at each other and doing everything in ridiculous tiny timescales because of combat drug injectors and what have you. And all of it's all about the grit and determinism of the working man and the super working man of the far future.
Yes.
It's just the Starship Troopers role-playing game, but not the cool, fun Casper Van Dien one with a bug planet.
Desire to know more intensifies.
Sadly, no. It's based on the boring Heinlein book. Huh? It's even got an alien race that's analogous to the Skinnies, the race that you didn't even know was in Starship Troopers because you've only seen the movie.
Yep.
So,
because the bugs aren't even like the main antagonists in that.
No,
book.
The antagonists in that are the human condition and the Skinnies because they betray you.
The human condition.
Yeah, it's fucking Heinlein. It's always the human condition. Also women.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Heinlein or Dickens. The human condition.
I'd give Heinlein a Dickens.
Yeah, give Heinlein that Dickens. I'd give Dickens a Heinlein, if you know what I mean.
Like if he was joking on something?
Yeah, I'd give him that Heinlein maneuver.
All right. I think we're probably running out of...
that's probably as far as we can get.
I don't think we're
going
to find a worse stopping point. Turns out we still don't have the technology to dig up.
Well, that's it for us.
Okay, folks. So let's get to the housing, background and housing... Housing details.
Yeah, let's get to our housing agreement real quick.
Housing. So
now you're allowed to have a lawn that is between a half inch and 3/4 inch high,
but no pink flamingos on there. Come on, this is a serious neighborhood.
your house can be the colors between off white and beige.
There's about a million colors in there. How do you feel about ecru?
Also, please have curtains, no blinds.
Your dog cannot exceed 22 pounds in weight.
And we are checking.
Or 46 decibels in maximum yap value.
If your trash can is on the curb past the time when it is picked up, and it's been about 4 to 5 hours, we will come by with a camera and let you know.
We'll send you a bill for $25 that you'll just ignore until you move out.
Yeah.
That's Homeowners Association jokes. Neither of us have ever lived in one.
I don't have to deal with that. I'm too poor.
Yes. Anyway, housekeeping details is the thing I was trying to say. First of all, we have a new Discord chat channel that we'd like you to come and visit. I'd like to tell you what it is on the air, but that's impossible because it's just a link you can click on. That said, if you go to our Twitter profile, it is the only sticky to post we have.
Yeah, it's the only thing that we've actually been like, oh, hey, check this out.
So go to our Twitter. System Mastery is the name on Twitter. Find our Discord profile. Come find us. We are often in there chatting with listeners and fans. We like it in there. It's fun to talk to them. Talk to us.
Yeah, there's an entire channel for me. I want memes.
Yeah,
and I need you meme-loving fucks to come in there and give me memes.
John Wants Memes is the channel to go in to post all the dankest memes you know.
I need them dank memes or spicy memes.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Also, if you just want to quote the show directly at me and get a kind of terse silence, that's the place to do it. Because I'll be like, what? Did I say that? I don't know. I've recorded 230 hours of content, buddy.
I don't know. You've got some sentence that sounds like it could go in any show that I've reviewed.
I might have said that. That sounds like me.
Well, that's definitely dickish. It's probably me.
What would you like me to do regarding it? I hope it's stare at my screen sadly for about 4 seconds.
What would you have of me?
But yo, go give John them memes. Come find us and interact with us. It's a fun place. Again, you can find that on our Twitter. Once again, System Mastery on Twitter, System Mastery on Facebook, Gmail, Reddit, Twitter, Tumblr, SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Also, System Mastery on Patreon, and this is a fun one to talk about today, because we are less than $100 from our new goal.
We've got that goal going on.
It's not a new goal, but our closest goal is at $1,000 per episode, we will take our Expounded Universe podcast, our brand new podcast, where we review old Star Wars Expanded Universe novels, 3 chapters at a time, from bi-weekly to regular weekly.
That is right. We are going to double the amount of content there for you.
That's correct. Way more Shizor, way more Dash Rendar, probably way more Thrawn and Callista and Mara Jade at some point.
I don't know, what is Jace? Is that a guy?
Jason is a guy with a C, and it's one of Han Solo's kids.
What about Nissa? Is that someone? Gideon?
Nissa's a bad guy from Arrow. Gideon is, I think, from the Bible.
Okay, how about Lilith, or maybe a
Bible.
Maybe Kiora.
Pretty sure Bible.
God damn it, Magic. Quit stealing from the Bible.
I think Kiora is actually from Gem and the Holograms.
Yeah, that's so. Exactly where it's from.
I know you're naming planeswalkers. You can't pull one over on me. I was doing that with my girlfriend just a couple days ago. We were having a discussion about baby names.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I think I've come around on a couple of baby names that if we were to ever have a kid, I'd be okay with. I'm fine with Harry. And she's like, oh, that's good. Like your maternal grandfather. And I was like, yeah, I'd also be okay with Ron. And she's like, really? I wouldn't have thought you'd like a name so normal. Yeah, I'd also be okay with Hermione. And she's like, oh, that seems like it's hard to pronounce. I got all the way to Albus. I went through like Percy and shit. And I finally got to Albus and she was like, oh, you're just naming Harry Potter things. And I was like, yes. Yeah, damn it.
You should have gotten that after Ron.
You should have gotten it to Harry. I wouldn't name a kid Harry.
I might name a kid Harry depending on my last name.
Well, yeah. If my last name was Penis, then I might go with a kid named Harry.
If I had the last name Balls.
That's true. If your last name was Balls, you'd consider Harry, Sticky.
Yeah.
Pendulous. Hello, I'm Pendulous Q Balls.
This is my son, Pendulous Balls.
That's two words.
Yes. Pendulous Balls.
Pendulous Balls. I think that was Pendulette's original name, right?
Yeah.
He changed it to Gillette, and everyone was like, aha, it's a pen joke. And he was like, no, it was just to get me out of being named Pendulous Balls.
Yeah, it's like that Men in Tights thing. My name used to be Shit Ass.
Poor Pendulette, poor Pendulous Balls. He's still affected with that disease in the family line, which is why his kid's name is like Moxie Crime Fighter or some shit. I think that's him. It might be Kevin Smith who has Moxie.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Kevin Smith who has Moxie Crime Fighter?
No, I know he has Harley Quinn.
That's
Smith.
Right. So it is Pendulette whose daughter is Moxie Crime Fighter.
Yeah. God, stop it. Fat celebrities that are sort of comedians, stop. Just stop.
Well, just take a note from Teller, who, as I recall, named his kid.
Yeah.
Jokes.
Hey.
Anyway, support the Patreon. Less than $100 to go. Man, for all the people who turned this show off because they thought that we were just at the ad segment, they just missed like 10 minutes of material.
Yeah, we had so much business. We had a lot of that comedy to get through.
Also, rate and review on iTunes, especially for the new Expounded Universe show. It's still at the point where it's like, we don't have enough ratings to show you what people think of this. I need you to go fix that, listeners.
Fix it. Fix it for us. Go, my minions.
And until such time as you do, or just until we have another show to put out, thank you so much, as always, for listening, and we'll see you soon. Have a good week.